Good morning. Welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Hi, Lynn. I'm Tim Henney. And I guess today might be the last day of the mountain bike season on dirt.
On dirt, not on snow, obviously.
Exactly.
That's coming, we hope.
Yeah.
But I do think that, I mean, it's good that we're starting into a snow cycle, but I have my bike on my car. I'm ready when I have a free moment to go biking because I think it will be the last day. What do you think? What's your prediction?
My mountain bike season ended, I think, in August.
There's still hope for you. You too can jump
rack,
on your bike.
My rack is on my car. That's the hopeful part of it for me. But this morning, we talk about the upcoming season that can't get here soon enough. And we're going to talk about Nordic skiing with the Nordic Betties. Inge Travis, one of the longtime coaches of the Betties, is here with us to talk about the program, how you can join, and why you, like us, are going to love the cross-country skiing season this year.
That's right. And then this month, November, is National Alzheimer's Disease and Awareness Month. More than 5 million Americans are living with this disease. We'll speak with, in the second half of the program, with Dr. Gayatri Devi, who has written a new book called The Spectrum of Hope, an optimistic and new approach to Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. Stay with us. It's The Mountain Life. We'll be back after these words.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at utaholympiclegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, the Park City Nordic Betties grew out of the dream of providing the women of Park City a true team experience and to help them foster a love for cross-country skiing. Co-founder Annie Morgan had coached a similar program 15 years ago in Sun Valley, Idaho, and Inge Travis, co-founder, had taught women's clinics at White Pine Nordic. Both had children actively participating in various youth programs for Nordic skiing, and both felt that the women of this community could really benefit from a similar experience. Inge Travis joins us now in the studio to talk us through the program, the Nordic Betties. Inge, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Tim.
Great to have you. So how many years has the Nordic Betty's been in existence? About five, six?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know your stuff. This is our fifth year in season.
So great. And it just is growing every year. Like, talk about how you started and how many women you have.
Actually,
currently.
When we started the first season, someone was thinking that we'd only get seven. And in fact, it was one of those rush things. We capped it at 25 and then we kept pushing it. So it's actually every year we have about 150.
Oh my
but
God.
We cap it. I mean, it is, we have nine coaches. The ratio is never above 10 to 1. And in fact, the parks, I mean, if it snows, sometimes the ratio is 1 to 1 and you get a private lesson with your, I mean, if it dumps snow.
Yeah. Well, like last year, probably a lot of those Nordic Betties were going powder skiing instead of skate skiing.
Actually, it was funny. We were explaining to them, you know, Annie and I go back and forth. We never want to cancel the Betties. Luckily, we had factored in another week, so the ladies got the 10 weeks. But there was definitely a day where we actually had to cancel it because there was so much snow. And we sent out an email and said, I swear it's not because all the coaches want to go powder skiing. It's literally because you do not want to ski in this much snow on the trails.
And then you went powder skiing.
Yes, that's true. And we saw a lot of Betties in line.
That's great.
including the coaches. I mean, I know a bunch of the coaches. And you said you have nine. Are they the same nine, or do you rotate in and out? Do you lose them, or is it pretty stable from the—
You know what? It is amazing. We love our coaches, and we've had the same coaches since we started, but we have added Aga, who is an amazing lady.
And she just joined the community. She's only been here a year or two.
Wow, you know your stuff, yeah. And she has a full-time job, but we get to have her on Tuesdays at noon. So we have had to add coaches, but we have always had the same coaches from the beginning, and they are absolutely amazing. We love them.
Do you have a wait list for participants?
You know what? Every year we have had a wait list. This year we definitely still have room and everything. But I will say White Pine is a great supporter of the Bettys, and so is Jeremy Ranch. And White Pine has offered all Bettys an amazing deal. So if you get your White Pine pass before November 30th, it's actually only $150 as an individual pass. But you can sign up. I mean, we're excited to have you whenever. But yeah, there people, the Bettys that know when we open up in September, I mean, we probably had like 30 registrations before September was over.
Wow. That's really looking ahead to the ski season.
Yes.
So take us through sort of the levels. I know you have people who've never been on skis before up to a race team.
Right.
So where's the bulk of the women in which, in the beginner or intermediate?
That's a great question. Well, it varies every year, but I will say Annie and I, we started the Bettys because women would come up and be like, can you teach me how to Nordic ski? And I would say, yeah. And then Annie and I started talking about it. And I was like, what is better than learning a sport outside with a bunch of ladies getting a workout? So, you know, we thought it was going to be just beginners, but in fact, we have all different levels. And what we do, our two main sessions are on Tuesdays. One is at 10. They're an hour and 15 minutes. And then one is at noon for the people that actually work out there in Park City. And the first year we thought, okay, we're going to divide people up into five different levels. And then all of a sudden we realized, I mean, I personally still consider myself a beginner, which make people, they laugh at me. But so we actually let them split up in their own levels. You know, the first day, one year we had an Olympic speed skater, and she went from not even knowing how to put on skis the first week till, you know, I think she ended up in advanced the last week. So we let them split themselves up because some ladies are, you know, have joined with a friend. Some ladies want to get an extreme workout, so they don't mind always being in the back trying to catch up. But we work on technique every single session. We really value their time. As soon as the session starts, we are out there skiing. It's not like we're just out there skiing and talking and hanging out. We're actually working on technique every single time. And so you're not stuck in that level. You know, if you feel, you know, the first 2 weeks, you might consider yourself a beginner, but in actuality, you might be an intermediate too. So we have newbies, beginners, intermediate one, intermediate two, and advanced.
Okay.
And you mentioned a minute ago, Inge, that you get support from White Pine, and then you talked about Jeremy Ranch, and I know those are different venues, and I've seen your group a lot in Round Valley. So I would imagine that where you go is determined some degree by snow. But if we have a great snow year and good coverage, you also want to change it up and go to different venues just to kind of give everybody a taste for what a different track looks like or feels like?
Exactly. That is a great point. We try and ski all over Park City. If we do go to White Pine or Jeremy, the Bettys, we will definitely cover your pass. You are not required to have a season's pass. We absolutely love mountain trails. I mean, Round Valley has three different trailheads, but we ski Willow Creek, we ski UOP, and sometimes we are surprised sometimes because some women have never even been into Round Valley, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is heaven. In fact, we, the Bettys, if you are a Betty, you actually are an active supporter of the Land of Oz. We have adopted the Land of Oz, so we sponsor that trail every year. So thank you, Bettys. And that's definitely part of it. We try and set up our calendar the beginning of the season. But you're right, Tim. We may have to change up.
And I know it's out of the way, but do you ever go to Soldier Hollow?
Ooh, yes. We went to Soldier Hollow. Unfortunately, there was one season. I remember we were doing dry land out at Quinn's in January, and people were in their tank tops. I mean, it was sort of sad. So we felt bad asking the ladies to travel to UOP, and we actually went to Solitude. But Annie and I realized, okay, we are a Nordic skiing group, and if we have to go find the snow, we will. And the ladies that actually came over to Solitude, it was the last day of the season, and the skiing was amazing.
I remember that year. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in Solitude that year, too.
Oh, I know. It's been really hard. Let's pray for another season like last one. So I'm wondering what you think it is about the program that attracts so many women. I mean, there were always women's clinics at White Pine, but there's something different that the Nordic Betties do that has created just a huge program. And I know that it was modeled after the Vamps in Sun Valley, which have hundreds and hundreds of women in, you know, a very small community up there. They only have about 5,000 people in that community. So here it is. Yeah. What is it special that you do aside from the obvious, which is the costumes? Or the kit, I should say. The kit.
Yeah, this year we actually have a neck gaiter. Every season we've done a different hat. This year we actually have a neck gaiter that I love, but it can be worn as a hat as well, as one of those cool headbands.
Gee, I wonder what those hats and neck bands look like.
looks really good on Lynn.
we are sporting hats and headbands from the Betties. We'll post a photo on our website.
Yeah. Tim's also looks good. It's from a few years ago. But I will say, I think Nordic skiing is one of those sports where you look at the equipment, you look at people doing it, and you might say, oh, I'd love to do that, but I don't even know how to start. And hence the reason why we actually started this is because women, our friends, are asking us, okay, I would like to do that, but they are intimidated. And I love it. These women come out of the woodwork. I mean, just like I said, the first season, someone's like, oh, you're going to get seven ladies. It was hilarious. All these ladies came out. Some had raced. Some had been doing the Wasatch Citizen Series for years, which is a great series in town. It has all different Nordic races, and anyone can be out there, like 5-year-olds, 70-year-olds. And I think we started it just because there was a demand. And I think being around other women, you know, sort of, you know, makes it fun. Definitely makes it fun.
There's solidarity.
Right. And these women are so cute. They get out there and they're like, what are these Nordic skis? And we don't know how to put them on. And they don't know if there's a right or a left, which there isn't. And they get out there and the coaches are always so impressed. Like, we thought they'd be like falling on their butt like I was the first 10 years. And they get after it. So it's, but I mean, what's better than being with a bunch of girls outside learning something new and exercising?
But you know, there's something deeper to Nordic skiing. And I would think that with your 5 years of working with women who are beginners to expert and sort of seeing those beginners and what draws them initially to look at, as you said, you look at people doing it and you go, gosh, that looks interesting, but I don't even know where to start. But there's something that draws you in with Nordic skiing. It's drawn all of us in, and we've been doing it for years. And I think it was the same thing. It's once you get on the snow and you get that rhythm and you start to glide, it takes hold of you. I mean, do you see that with the ladies? Is that part of it? There's just kind of this inherent draw and grab.
I totally agree. And one thing that Park City is doing an amazing job is that they just keep adding trails. I mean, Nordic trails. I know we are known for our biking trails, but you can ski all over Park City now. I mean, you could ski from town all the way out to the old Whole Foods. You can ski the UOP. I mean, you could basically ski all around town. And it is one of those things where I think once you start, there's always learning. Like, a lot of our technique or our drills, like, we are doing the same drills, believe it or not, as like the U.S. ski team, because you still are always practicing. There's always a way to get better. I had one other thought, but I forget what that was.
We do that too. That but happens
while,
to us.
While you're doing that, you're doing it here in Park City, where it could be, it could feel like it's 45 degrees out, even if it's 30.
Oh, that's a good point.
The sun is shining. We're not in some place in the Midwest where there's cloud cover and it's sub-zero.
Totally.
I mean, it's just an amazing experience all the way around.
Yeah. And it's fun to do with other people. And actually in Round Valley, you can take your dog out there, except for in the Land of Oz, which makes some people happy. So the dog's not a distraction. It's also easier on your body. I don't know if other people had this problem, but I have really bad incontinence. So when I run, the girls, and even my husband's horrified, my kids pretend they don't know me, but it's not jarring on your body. So, and it's definitely a workout. I remember when I first started, I would go to spin class at lunch and, you know, I'd get sweaty maybe 15 minutes into it. And when I tried to Nordic ski at lunch, I mean, like literally within 5 minutes, I was taking a layer off.
Yeah. And you're outside and you're breathing and it's beautiful. Right. And it is the most fluid motion. And I think what has captured me, I mean, I've done the sport for decades, and that there's always something to work on, I think. You're always trying to think about how to make your technique a little bit better and become a little bit more efficient. And I think there's that's very enticing.
Right, definitely. In fact, I'll tell all the Bettys when they come out, if you never want to do a sit-up again, you do not have to. You can come out here and double pull. And if you're using your upper body, in fact, I'll be like, your arms pretty much should never be tired after Nordic skiing. And they don't believe me. But as soon as we teach them technique of using your upper body and doing the crunch, I mean, come out there, ladies. Go double pulling with your friends and forget those sit-ups.
Yeah, absolutely. So in order to register, you go to parkcitynordicbettys.com.
Yes.
Talk about the price a little bit.
Okay. It's $350 for a 10-week session. We do actually started a 4-week session for classic and brand newbies. Now they're 6-week sessions, and that costs less. But you do sign up online. We're snail mail. You have to send in the check and your registration form. But it doesn't just include the 10 weeks. Like, we do a kickoff party. We do different, we'll do like a fit night. You know, Jeremy and White Pine will reach out to us. We do wax clinics, which I think I've waxed my skis once. I know that's really embarrassing, but I have a husband that can wax skis. He's been doing it since he was 6 years old, and now my son can do it a little. But
gee, do you know any other 6-year-olds we could get into the waxing business?
We don't want those clinics, the wax clinics, to intimidate people, because, as I said, you don't have to wax your skis. You know, White Pine can do that, and there's other places in town. But it's fun to learn why waxing is important. Just to learn how the skis work actually help you figure out your technique and it helps you understand what you're doing on the snow. And I do have to clarify, we had a neighbor that didn't know what Nordic skiing was, and my husband will do, you know, private wax clinics in the garage with a bunch of guys, and he'll do that for the Bettys. But my neighbor kept saying she was horrified, because she was like, oh my God, he's teaching these guys how to wax. And finally, after like 3 hours, we understood that she was thinking of a totally different wax thing. And we're like, no. This is waxing your skis. She was so impressed that my husband, Jason, could wax. And I was like, no.
Wax your back.
So it is. And one thing we do at the end of the year, which we started, which is super fun, is we do an egg hunt. And the ladies are so cute. So we do an egg hunt. We hide eggs all over. There's chocolate. There's in there. There's well as like, you know, facials, other fun stuff that you'd want. There's always a golden egg.
Is there wine? That would just like
wine
make it the perfect
normally
egg hunt.
Comes when we have lunch after our intro party, or when the ladies get together on their own. But no, there's no wine in the egg. But yeah, maybe we can get some wine gift certificates. I'll work on that. From Old Town Cellars. We love their wine.
One thing, so I usually go up and do the Boulder Mountain Tour in Sun Valley. It's a 35-kilometer race. And I always see a lot of Bettys up there, because you have this great kit,
right.
Outfit, costume.
Yep.
Well,
always
I was going to
nice
talk
colors.
About the kit, too. So good.
it looks really good. So I see a lot of them up there. So a lot of people are getting into this racing, but it, you know, on a really fun level. Some get
totally.
More competitive. We see them at the Wasatch Citizen Series and probably at other races that I don't go to.
Yep. It's fun. Great. Like you meet a lot of people in Betty's. In fact, I think there's a lot of women that, well, of course, we all know that everyone's moving to Park City. But there are, you know, last year we had two women there from Florida. I didn't even know that. And they never wanted to stop Nordic skiing. And the lady's like, I love this. And I said, well, how long have you been Nordic skiing? And she said, well, I just moved from Florida. And then we did, Lynn asked if we had a race group last year. We did have a race group. And we focused on race technique and intervals. And I went to one of the Wasatch Citizen Series races at Jeremy Ranch, and there were no racers there. It was just these new women. And I was like, okay, you're going to go down that hill? And they're like, yeah, sure. I mean, these new women. And I think it was probably maybe they dared each other, but it was awesome. These women get out there, and they snowplow like I used to do for the first 10 years, and they work really hard, and afterwards they're laughing. But it is. It's like it becomes a community.
Yeah.
And we actually, in the summer, Annie and I went out to have a little meeting, and all these ladies were waving to us, and I recognized one, and they're like, hello, Ingy and Annie. And finally I was like, I don't know if we know you. Well, they were a bunch of Betty's that all met one another, and of course we didn't recognize them because we're so focused on coaching, and then we didn't recognize them without their gear on. But these women have been meeting for lunch once a month. They were like the Betty's little lunch group. So,
well, I know somebody who is very thrilled to have begun with the Betty's and learn how to become a competent Nordic skier. But I have to tell you the thing that this person, that she was most thrilled about, was the outfit. Oh my God, she was so excited.
Well, I love our uniform.
When's it coming? When is it going to be here? And she hadn't even skied yet, but that was the big anticipation was the outfit. So I want to ask you one other thing, and I'm not allowed to talk about this, so you and Lynn are going to have to talk about it. But what do you think about Bonanza Flat as being a possible high altitude Nordic track?
I think that's a great idea. In fact, we're getting off the topic, I think. But yeah, I was asked to go to the meeting the other night. I think I spoke out of turn, so I couldn't really say everything I wanted to say. But I think Bonanza Flats, I think I donated five different times. It kind of got confusing. And I did corner Heinrich and say, is there going to be Nordic skiing up there? And he said, well, yes, we would love to have that. We haven't figured out exactly what's going on, but oh my gosh. I mean, to go up there and Nordic ski around there, that is going to be heavenly. That will definitely attract more people to Park City.
Certainly, it would lengthen the season. There's already quite a bit of snow up there.
Yep.
And
That's true.
The snow, as we know, lasts far longer than most people want who live up there.
Right.
But we would love it as Nordic skiers.
Talk about being peaceful. I mean, until they opened up Brown Valley, I mean, I'm not saying this negative, but you were skiing, you know, next to cars out there by the White Barn. I mean, it is heavenly getting out there, being away from everything, which you can do in Round Valley right now. And I don't know who's responsible for figuring that out. But yeah, that would be heaven up there.
Be nice.
We would definitely be up there with the Betty's. Maybe just a little wine and cheese picnic.
Speaking of heaven, I just read that Galena Lodge area, the trails around Galena Lodge, which is where the Boulder Mountain Tour starts in Sun Valley, is opening this weekend. They have a lot of snow.
Oh gosh, girls trip.
Well, they have enough. I know. That's exactly what I thought.
Sorry,
kick
Tim.
Off the Nordic Betty season.
Well, I'm an honorary member.
Yeah, you have a hat.
With our sessions, you don't have to have a kid to be a Betty, but we do follow the school calendar. So there's never any stress about, okay, Presents weekend or Christmas. We start the first 2 weeks in December, just so the women can Nordic ski over vacation. But there's never a time where your kid is out of school and the Betty's is in session.
Okay.
So that's kind of nice.
Well, we're about out of time. Any last words? Other than that, it starts the first 2 weeks in December.
And there's still room in all the sessions. We have a classic clinic that starts in January that's 6 weeks long. We have a brand newbies, which is only 6 weeks long. Last year was 4 weeks long, but the ladies wanted a little longer. And we did that in case you didn't want to commit to 10 weeks. So you sort of could try it out and see. But actually, we have so many returning newbies, and they wanted longer. But, you know, one thing I noticed about 2 years ago, I tried to start learning how to play ice hockey. And I don't have the best back. And my mom said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to go play some ice hockey. And she's like, what are you doing? You have a bad back. And I'm like, Mom, it's like meditation. And I was like, it's better than yoga, because I would get out there for an hour And all I could think about was trying to get to the puck, which was really hard for me. I mean, I thought it would be simple, but it was meditation because I couldn't think about dinner, what I was making for dinner, and they want to go for a run or a bike ride. I'm thinking of the bills. I'm thinking when I need to pick up the kids, all these things I want to get done. But when I would play ice hockey, all I could think about was learning technique. So, which is somewhat like learning for the Bettys. I mean, you're out there and you can't think about anything else because we are doing drills and we're working on technique. So it's almost a little bit of a meditation. And believe, it's kind of nice to have someone just tell you what to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Embrace the present moment.
Yes.
Co-founder of the Nordic Bettys, Inge Travis, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life. Good luck this season.
Thank you.
And we'll be back after these words.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics and KPCW supporter, providing knee and shoulder care focused on cartilage restoration and joint resurfacing. We are now incorporating stem cell therapy and regenerative orthopedics. More information on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
This is Nanette Bush with Fairway Independent Mortgage, supporter and longtime listener of KPCW. Fairway Independent Mortgage offers personal home, vacation home, and investment property lending. Our mortgage team partners with local realtors to provide our clients with resources to understand the home finance process. Located at 1700 Park Avenue or at nanettebush.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, that was Inge Travis and the Nordic Bettys. It's Park City, NordicBettys.com if you'd like to sign up. And in the meantime, let's just do a snow dance. I'm ready to go. Today's the last day of mountain biking.
And I'm suffering now from Betty's hat head.
Oh, yes, you are indeed. It's a great hat. Our next guest is Dr. Gayatri Devi. She has written a new book called The Spectrum of Hope, an optimistic and new approach to Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. November is National Alzheimer's Disease and Awareness Month. More than 5 million Americans are living with this disease. We speak with Dr. Devi, who will tell us about this spectrum, how she considers the spectrum of treating Alzheimer's helps with individualized treatment, and that is the gap that she has experienced so far previously. Dr. Gayatri Devi, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Oh, well, thank you.
It's so wonderful whenever I see some new work published on Alzheimer's. There's so much that we don't know about it, and there's so much yet to be uncovered. Do you agree?
I 100% agree with that. I think you're absolutely right. There's so much that we don't know, and we operate as if we do know, and that's the problem.
Right. And so your book is called The Spectrum of Hope, and you talk about the spectrum of Alzheimer's and other dementias, just like the spectrum of, say, autism or any other illness. And while some people might think that it's obvious that there are degrees of Alzheimer's, how did you come up with this idea of a spectrum?
So there is currently data, and the Institute of National Institute of Health, the NIH, and the National Institute of Aging have come out with this criterion that says that there is a spectrum in terms of patients who have all the pathology associated with Alzheimer's, where they have no symptoms at all. So it's called preclinical Alzheimer's. And then within people who have symptoms, they further subdivide it into those with mild cognitive impairment who can then go on to develop dementia. And then finally, you have patients with Alzheimer's disease itself. And what I've done is I've taken the category of patients who have clinical Alzheimer's disease, and if you look in that group, you find that there are many subcategories and different types of Alzheimer's based on the part of the brain that the pathology affects. So only 50% of people present with classical Alzheimer's with memory loss, and the other half can have other kinds of symptoms, including trouble finding words, trouble calculating change, trouble figuring out a map, depending on the brain area affected, and memory may not be involved until much later. The other important thing that I wanted people to be aware of is that just like in the autism spectrum or the spectrum in any chronic illness, in Alzheimer's, there are the vast majority of people and are living in the community, most of whom are undiagnosed, and they are functional and independent members of society, and it's only a small group of people who go on to get the kind of Alzheimer's that we associate with the public face of Alzheimer's, the people in a nursing home who don't know who they are and don't recognize family members. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. The vast majority of people with pathology consistent with Alzheimer's and even clinical symptoms of Alzheimer's are living and functioning and independent in the community.
Dr. Devi, could you talk about Alzheimer's in terms of dementia? And you just talked about the face of Alzheimer's that we recognize. And I'm curious as to when that face of Alzheimer's that we all have some degree of familiarity with, because it's in the media, it's in the public domain in a way that I don't believe it was until fairly recently. But could you kind of give us a timeline of how Alzheimer's became such an issue and when that happened? Was there kind of a tipping point? And then how it relates to dementia in general?
Okay, so just very quickly, dementia is an umbrella term that basically means any kind of loss and death of nerve cells that leads to permanent changes in cognition and the ability to think and remember. There are many different types of dementia. Alzheimer's is one of many types of dementia. Other common types of dementia include vascular dementia, where the brain cell death occurs from strokes. You can have dementia from infections, like, say, mad cow disease. You can have dementia from Parkinson's. The most common type of dementia is Alzheimer's type dementia, where there's pathology with the deposition of plaques and tangles in the brain. Alois Alzheimer, in the turn of the late 1800s to the early 1900s, described the condition in a woman of about 55 years of age, and he found the pathology, and he said this particular illness associated with brain disease and trouble forgetting and trouble with cognition is associated with the plaques and tangles. And subsequently, German life insurance companies decided that 65 was the age of senility, and anybody who developed these changes before the age of 65 at Alzheimer's, and anyone after getting it after the age of 65 had senile dementia. But now, in the last 30 years, we no longer use the word senile dementia because none of us really associate old age with senility. We are beginning to associate aging and older folk with vibrant, functional lives. And along those lines, the pathology that was found initially to be termed senile dementia has now been re-termed Alzheimer's disease, and also because the pathology is the same. However, the way the disease progresses and the way the disease behaves is vastly different between those who get it when they're younger and folks who get it later in life. So I think the tipping point occurred about 30-some-odd years ago when people began to use Alzheimer's to encompass the individuals who were getting it later in life.
Those plaques and tangles that you talked about, is there a way to, there's a way to address plaques and tangles. Can you tell us what you've learned about those plaques and tangles and what people can do to minimize them?
So the most important thing to realize is while there are many drugs and treatments aimed at reducing the amount of plaques and tangles, and all the ones that we've seen so far have not yet been shown to be effective, but that does not mean there's no hope for the future because there are very many other drugs coming down the pipeline. What it is important to realize is that currently, with our available treatments and our available methods of intervention, we still have ways of keeping the brain functioning and functioning well despite plaques and tangles in a significant majority of patients with Alzheimer's. And the way we can do that is basically by exploiting the brain's ability to bypass blockages, if you will, in the network, in the communication network that is the brain, by creating new pathways, new connections and synapses, even if some of the cells have died in the old pathways. So by doing that, we are able to keep, by embracing the idea of neural plasticity, we've been able to show consistently that patients with stroke can resume function even if that part of the brain is dead. And similarly, in patients with Alzheimer's, you can maintain function despite the fact that you have this deposition of plaques and tangles.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Gayatri Devi. She has written a new book called The Spectrum of Hope, An Optimistic and New Approach to Alzheimer's Disease and Other Dementias. So what about preventing plaques and tangles from the get-go? I know that there are a lot of different modes of pre-healing, I guess I would say, a way to stave off Alzheimer's. You know, is it the things that we hear about that, you know, exercise and diet and certain lifestyle choices that can stave off the effects of Alzheimer's, or rather the actual physical plaques and tangles?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think that's very important to know and embrace the reality, which is that between 50 and 60% of new cases of Alzheimer's can be effectively prevented completely by just embracing these changes in your lifestyle. You'd have to start fairly early in your 20s and 30s in order to be able to prevent the illness from even showing up. And you can do that very simply. You can do that by moderate levels of aerobic exercise, 30 minutes of exercise 3 days a week, by making sure you have a diet that's very much a Mediterranean diet, or even a diet that has high amounts of curry, for example, like an Indian diet, because that those kinds of diets, because of their levels of curcumin, and the Mediterranean diet is very good in the types of fats that are good for the brain. Those diets are found to be nurturing for brain health and keep the brain in a state of vibrancy for much longer. In addition to that, a good night's sleep cannot be underestimated, because consistent sleep every night, which most of us don't unfortunately get, has been shown to reduce risk for Alzheimer's. And one of the reasons for that is because when we are sleeping, our brain sanitation system kicks into gear and starts to remove the plaques. And that happens when you're at night while you're sleeping. The other things that one can do to help stave off Alzheimer's is to make sure that you keep your weight at an optimal level that's good for health, as well as control risk factors like diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and heart disease. All of those factors individually and together can help to prevent Alzheimer's.
You know, a couple minutes ago, you were talking about all these people walking around with undiagnosed Alzheimer's, and that there's a very small percentage of people who are actually getting diagnosed in a timely manner. Could you give us some examples of what that might look like in a person that doesn't know that they have some sort of dementia or Alzheimer's?
Well, so what I usually see in my practice, Lynn, is I see patients who are very high functioning, who perhaps are working in corporations, or they're working as secretaries, or they're working at homemakers. So they're functioning very well in the roles that they have, who've noticed that they're having problems with their thinking, with their memory. Sometimes they're terrified that they're going to find out that they have Alzheimer's, which for many people is akin to having a death sentence. Sometimes they're just worried that, you know, they think, well, is this normal forgetting? And I think the first barrier for many folk is going to get a diagnosis, because that in and of itself is a very scary time. You're worried that you might find out something that you don't really want to know. Then if you do find out that you have Alzheimer's, the common myth is that there is no treatment for it, and whatever treatment there is ineffective, which is untrue. So the people who are brave enough to go in to get an evaluation often can be rewarded, because they may find out that their memory loss is really just normal for their age, or they may find out that it's related to some hormonal dysfunction. In women, for example, who are going through menopause, it could just be related to changes in level of estrogen. It could be something as simple as going through a depression, which is causing cognitive changes. Chronic pain can sometimes leave people with symptoms that look like dementia. Or even, you know, in the worst case scenario, if they find out that they do have what looks like early Alzheimer's, based on the results of testing, MRIs, and specific scans to look at plaque in the brain, the earlier they get diagnosed, the more effective treatment can be. And the more effective the treatment, and the earlier we intervene to keep the brain cells healthy, the longer they can live functional, purposeful lives.
Dr. Devi, you just mentioned what I wanted to ask you about, which is that process of assessment. If somebody is brave enough to go in and find out if they have plaque and tangles, how do they do that? Is it an MRI? Do we have the technology now that I could simply walk in and say, I'm willing to pay for it, I haven't been prescribed, but I want to know if I have plaques and tangles, and I want to, you know, do a self-assessment. Is that possible?
So there are people who come in and say, look, I'd like to figure out if I'm at risk. Is there something I need to know, and I need to be able to plan my life? I need to be able to figure out how to spend the years that I have ahead of me. Maybe my father has Alzheimer's. Maybe there's something I'm concerned about. So, yes, you can do that. You can go in to a specialty clinic. Often it's a memory disorders clinic. Sometimes there are neurologists or geriatricians, and now increasingly general internists who are spending more time specializing in this area, because there are so many more people needing such services. And what commonly is involved in an evaluation is the person gets a good general background history. I mean, what kind of person are you? Were you always somebody who was good with memory, or were you always someone who was good with articulating? Or were you someone who always had trouble finding words? Did you always get lost going from going down the street to buy milk? So all this will inform the physician as to who you were to start with, and now what are your new deficits? Were you someone who had a phenomenal memory who's now having trouble forgetting? Were you someone who could speak your way through a room and now you're having trouble finding words? And then you get an evaluation, which is a cognitive evaluation, where we look at your abilities in different areas, in different, what your working memory, your ability to use and understand language, your different types of visual memory, auditory memory, et cetera. And then if that shows abnormality, you may get an MRI, which looks to see if you have any tiny strokes or other problems that could exacerbate function. And then finally, there are definitive tests. You can do a spinal fluid analysis where you do what's called a spinal tap, send the fluid off, and that will show you whether there's the plaques and tangles that are consistent with Alzheimer's. Or you can go in for a PET scan, and that will show whether you have the plaques that are seen in Alzheimer's disease.
Well, since your book is called The Spectrum of Hope, I wanted to ask you about that aspect of hope. Was it surprising to you when you started to peel back the layers of dementia and then Alzheimer's to find, I guess, number one, how little was known, and then within that realm of the unknown, how much hope exists?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the more I know about Alzheimer's, the less I know about it. And the thing that is most painful to me, it's absolutely so painful, is to see patients and families and sometimes physicians just saying that there's no hope, you know, and the patient is doomed to spend many years withering away into nothing, losing confidence in themselves, when in fact there are things that we currently have available that time and again and through experience with working with patients, I know that our brains are incredibly versatile. They're versatile even in the face of Alzheimer's disease. And simple things like targeted brain exercises, which I think of as kind of like physical therapy for the brain, can help keep the brain active and keep the person functional for a significantly longer period of time. And that the majority of people with Alzheimer's are functioning and independent persons living and mingling in society, taking care of their grandchildren and going to the grocery store and driving to church.
Dr. Devi, I'm wondering about the preponderance of Alzheimer's and the statistics. Is it growing or is our awareness of it growing?
I believe our awareness of it is growing. I think we're making the diagnosis more often. We're using the word Alzheimer's more often, whereas before it used to exist under the cloak of hardening of the arteries. Remember that term?
Yes.
And as I said before, senile dementia, or it wasn't even mentioned that much. And now more people are expecting more of their lives as they get older. They're not content to say, yes, you know, I'm in my 70s now, and I'm not able to move as much, and yeah, my mind is more feeble. People don't accept that. They want to continue to function in their 70s as someone would have wanted to function in their 40s just a few decades ago. So our demands on ourselves as we age has also increased. So then we expect to do more, and when we're forgetting more, then we may seek help more often. So I think it's not necessarily that there are more cases because there are more people who are older than a certain age, but I don't think there's an increase in the absolute proportion.
Okay, interesting. One of the things that you include in your book are the anecdotes about some of the stories that you've experienced, the patients that you've had throughout the years. Could you talk a little bit about them? Because I was thinking that perhaps it's some of the same reasons. Well, speaking in particular about Amelia, a 90-year-old who can still speak four languages fluently, these are the people that you miss the diagnosis on because they're still so competent in so many ways.
Yeah, and you know, I think what you want to do is you want to support patients as they get older, you know, when they have the diagnosis, and not lose the person for the disease, which people tend to do as soon as someone has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. It's almost as if in many of us, and I've been as guilty of this in the past as anyone else, place that person in a different category,
right.
And maybe think of them as less competent, whereas just a week before when they didn't have the diagnosis, we thought they were competent. And then that somehow carries over into our interactions with patients. So I think, listen, I'm barely fluent in a language, forget four.
Yeah.
And Amelia has been fluent in four languages, and she's in her 90s. So bravo, and how impressive is that, even though she has Alzheimer's, even though she can't remember perhaps what she had for breakfast. So I think to celebrate what patients have and what they can bring to the table is very important, rather than lament some of their shortcomings. Although that doesn't mean we ignore them, but not necessarily to focus on that.
Dr. Devi, I'm thinking in terms of Park City and locales. Is there any connection in your research to Alzheimer's and where people live? And I bring this up only because I'm thinking about our little community here of 8,000 permanent residents, and we have this really vibrant senior community, clear thinking, clear speaking, and you know, they're fit and they're active for the most part, at least in my experience and interaction. And I'm wondering if there are areas in the country or around the world where you can sort of go, wow, you know, this location and the people who are here have a higher or lower percentage of Alzheimer's.
Well, there are parts of the world, for example, you know, this well-known village in Colombia where there's a very, very high prevalence of Alzheimer's because there's a strong genetic tendency amongst some of the villagers there to have Alzheimer's. But as a rule, I think what really determines the number of cases of Alzheimer's is how fit people are. I mean, if Park City is a place where seniors are embracing a lifestyle that allows them to be healthy, eat healthy, and live in a way that's great for their brains, then I would say that that's probably an environment that I'd want to be in as I get older. So I don't know that there's necessarily any particular place in the world where there's a higher or lower incidence, although you read about that a bit. But some of that may be the bias of people tolerating more forgetfulness in their elders. Some of it is also the bias in terms of the diagnosing of patients with Alzheimer's. But it's more about the health and the individual person that I think determines the risk in that person.
Okay. Well, our guest, Dr. Gayatri Devi, and the book is called The Spectrum of Hope, An Optimistic and New Approach to Alzheimer's Disease and Other Dementias. Dr. Devi, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Oh, thank you so much, Lynn and Tim. I appreciate your having me on your show. Thank you.
All right.
You.
Take care.
Really nice to hear some more about Alzheimer's research and the work that she has been doing. Still so many questions out there.
Yeah, sounds like there's a lot of possibility for answers, though. That's kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to thank our underwriters, the, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Phil Davidson Orthopedics, Park City Mountain, the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Fairway Independent Mortgage, and Valley Behavioral Health. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life today. We'll be back after these words.
I'm Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and KPCW sponsor. Epic Promise grants focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our community. Grants fund programs that help kids achieve great things in the classroom and develop a passion for the outdoors by engaging guests, our local community, and employees to create a more promising future. More information at epicpromise.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life today. I want to thank our guest, Inge Travis, the co-founder of the Park City Nordic Betties, and we're hoping that that can get off the ground when snow begins to fall. When? Tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow?
I think it's tomorrow.
Here's hoping.
Here's hoping. So ride your bike today. And also to Dr. Gayatri Devi with her book, The Spectrum of Hope, An Optimistic and New Approach to Alzheimer's Disease. And we have just about a half a minute remaining. Can you tell us quickly, we do that arts and culture segment each month.
Right.
There was a Project ABC brainstorm session yesterday.
Yeah, it was really quite amazing. It was from 1 o'clock until 7 o'clock, with the last hour being an open house to exhibit the discussion items that came up. And there was a room full of people over at the education center at the hospital. And it was a one-hour kind of kickoff presentation from the different administrative heads, and then people engaged in the art community kind of distilling down topics, and it was really phenomenal. The soulful expression of our community.
Sounds great. It's